Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation, Toronto Raptors community. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined today for a special playoff preview edition of the podcast by CBSSports.com's James Herbert. How you doing, man?
Great. This is the best time of year, and it's beautiful outside. Just got back from Raptors practice, and I can't believe there's actually a playoff game tomorrow.
I'm in such an incredible mood today. It's unbelievable. I was outside walking around a little bit. You got playoffs tomorrow. We're doing playoff preview stuff today. The Jungle Book comes out today. I'm probably going to go see that tonight.
Oh, wow.
To get a break from all the Raptors writing and stuff I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an NBA writer or just an NBA fan, like anything that you had on your social calendar, like just try to do it tonight.
Yeah,
because you're not going to have a night where nothing is happening for quite a while.
I mean, unless you're an exclusively Western Conference fan and like all those series end in four games, like they might, then you might have a little bit of time, but I don't know anyone. It's not like the NL and AL in baseball. People actually kind of care about the whole league, it seems.
I think Clippers Blazers is going to go seven games.
Really?
Yeah, that's the only one.
I think it'll be entertaining, but I don't know if, like, I haven't really dug into that one as much as I probably should, but I think I have like the Clippers in like five or six, but
yeah. Yeah, that was the only one I had going longer than five.
The other one.
And I honestly, I thought about making the other three in the West all sweeps, but I couldn't quite do it with Thunder Mavs.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the Eastern Conference is the way more interesting conference, at least for the early part of the postseason, which is kind of weird.
It's so weird. It's I don't know when the last time that happened was. I mean, I guess a couple of years ago. I guess the 2014 playoffs, both sides were pretty compelling. There was like, what, five game sevens?
Yeah, that was incredible.
Yeah, that was an amazing first round. I don't know if we're going to get that this year.
I don't think so.
The Eastern Conference is interesting. I think there are a couple series that could go long. We'll get into whether we think the Raptors and Pacers will go long. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what this whole show is going to be. We're going to just sort of take every angle, look at every angle of this Raptors-Pacers series, and just sort of try to come to a conclusion on what's going to happen. We're also going to answer a few listener questions, and we'll obviously do the episode sponsor as we always do. So that'll be about it for today. Thank you so much for joining us today in the headquarters. We'll be back in just a second. Welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with James Herbert of CBSSports.com to preview Raptors-Pacers. Before we get going with the series, James, you were at Raptors practice / playoff media day today. Did anything particularly interesting come out of that?
Yeah, I just got back. I spent most of the time talking to Norman Powell for a feature, so I didn't hear all of the comments, but I think the most interesting thing that was said from what I saw was Kyle Lowry talking about last season and saying we were trash. basically talking about, everybody knows what happened the second half of last season, which culminated in the embarrassing playoff sweep at the hands of the Wizards. But what Lowry was saying that I think is interesting was that all of that bluster coming into the playoffs last year about how they learned from the year before and about how they were confident they could play with anybody. And I remember doing an interview with DeMar and he said, yeah, this season's been tough, but like, it hasn't been that bad. It could be a lot worse. Like, we're confident. And what Kyle is saying is basically all of that was like what they had to say, but they knew that they were playing terribly and they did have a confidence issue going into the playoffs because it's not easy to just flip that switch. And this season, they really don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. I've been sort of coming back to this and just like last season, I think we, like, going into the playoffs, I was, like, looking through old tweets and stuff, and I found a tweet from Mike Prada today from last year before the Wizards and Raptors series. Mm-hmm. And it was essentially, like, this is the saddest series I've ever seen. Both teams want to lose so they can fire their coaches, which obviously didn't quite happen until Whitman got let go a couple days ago. But and it was just, like, both teams, like, yes, I know the Raptors, like, the Raptors seemed to be favored, but it wasn't crazy to think that they could lose and kind of lose in, you know, tremendous fashion like they did, given the way they were playing and the way Lowry was completely broken down and the way they so heavily relied upon like Lou Williams and DeMar DeRozan and like chintzy free throws, like were such a big, you know, part of their offense last year. And, you know, the defense obviously was a bottom 10 defense. It was a disaster all season. Like, in retrospect, it's not all that surprising that they ended up losing that series. But this season, like, I think if you look at the pedigree of the team and like just sort of look at history, like a 56-26 team with two All-Stars, a potential Coach of the Year, like two viable Sixth Man of the Year candidates, a team that, you know, beat up on the entire Eastern Conference, won the season series with every Eastern Conference playoff team, and, you know, did pretty well against the West as well. Like, those kind of teams don't lose in the first round. And I think, like, everything's just so much steadier and more stable going into the playoffs this season. I'd be like, I mean, we'll get into why this is, but I'd be kind of shocked if the Raptors ended up losing this series. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the same thing. I'd say going into the year, the hope within the organization and within the fan base was that they would be a more balanced team and that they'd be, you know, more able to play playoff style basketball, whatever that is. And the cliche is that the game slows down. I think the reality is that most of the time, yeah, it does slow down. But what really happens is it's officiated differently and other teams have more time to scout you. And the Raptors just didn't have that many moves that they could make after what the Wizards did to them early in that series. And then everything just kind of fell apart. And I think with the tools that Dwayne Casey has at his disposal, with the amount of two-way players that are on the team versus what he had last year, if the Pacers do come out and surprise the Raptors, I think there are different combinations that he can go to and different things that might work. And that's why I think they're more prepared this time. I think obviously they've also learned from that experience and they're like, they could not be more motivated to get out of the first round this time. But I just think it's a better team. It's a deeper team. And I don't look at it the same way that I did last year. The funny thing is I actually went back and looked at my playoff preview for the Wizards-Raptors series. And I said, yeah, it's a battle of two teams who've been like super average for the last couple of months. Like neither of them were playing good basketball at all. The Wizards, I guess, were slightly more talented. The Raptors were probably thought of as deeper. But it was really hard to pick that series. I know I struggled with it. This time I didn't really struggle with it. I went Raptors in six. But if they wrapped it up sooner than that, I wouldn't be surprised. I do expect Paul George to have a couple of monster games. I think offensively, in a playoff series, you might see a different Monte Ellis than you saw for some of the regular season. The Pacers do have the profile of a team that can make the Raptors work and can challenge them, can maybe make it a long series. But I think there's this pretty significant talent gap.
For sure. Before we dive into just the sort of nitty gritty, I want to go back a couple days as well. Masai Ujiri at his end of the season like presser on Wednesday, I believe, and sort of gave a vote of confidence to Dwayne Casey saying that he deserves to be the coach. And it kind of seems that even if things do go awry in the playoffs here, he's probably going to be back as the coach. I tend to totally agree with that. I'm all for stability with teams and, you know, not firing at the first sign of trouble, or I guess in this case it'd be like the third or fourth sign of trouble, but still, I'm all for stability. I think Casey's done a really good job this season, particularly just in terms of like fostering internal growth. I mean, maybe this is just the entire coaching staff as a whole, but I mean, a big reason this team is a lot different than last year and there's a different mood around it is that guys have just improved internally. And yeah. Lowry took a massive step and Valanciunas has been really good lately and has really taken a step and has become a more reliable defender and a more reliable dive man in the pick and roll. And you know, DeRozan obviously has added, you know, the playmaking aspect to his game. Terrence Ross had a nice bounce back season.
Yeah.
Patrick Patterson suddenly became like a ridiculously good defender who can switch a bunch of positions when he was never really thought of that. And I think a lot of that, while like it might just be guys just general like progression through their career, I think Casey and the coaching staff deserve a lot of credit for the growth that's gone on. And I'm totally okay not basing, you know, who coaches the team based on like a 4 or 5, 6, 7 game playoff series and looking at the bigger picture, because I think what Casey and the staff have done this season is super impressive.
Yeah, he's a survivor, man. Like I remember back a few years ago, Brian Colangelo's last season with the team, there were some real questions about if Casey would even last to the end of the season and might Colangelo try to pin it on Dwayne, fire him and try to see what they can do with the rest of the year so he could keep his job. And it ended up being sort of the opposite publicly in that at the end of the year, Dwayne Casey and Brian Colangelo both kind of said, we both want to be back and we want each other to be back and let's tie our fates together, because the concern was that if Colangelo was replaced, then whoever the new guy was probably going to bring in his own guy. And Casey ended up earning the trust of Masai Ujiri. And I think it surprised a lot of people when Ujiri decided to bring him back. And then what they've built since then is really impressive. And I think if Ujiri wanted to make a coaching change after what happened with the Wizards last year, nobody really would have questioned that. Like, he could have easily gone another way. But I think he looked at what he had built in terms of the culture and how the players had improved and his relationship with the stars in the backcourt and thought, let's give this another chance. They ended up changing a little bit how they play. They ended up getting some players that I think more reflect what Dwayne Casey believes in terms of defensive basketball for sure. And yeah, they changed over some assistants. I mean, Casey has outlasted some of the guys that he brought in with him, or pretty much all of the guys that he brought in with him. but I do think he deserves a lot of credit for the identity that this team has and wants to have going forward. He's been a huge part of that. The players will all speak to the fact that he's been extremely consistent over the years in terms of his message. And I think he's done a phenomenal job this season and should absolutely be in the running for Coach of the Year, not just because of the improvement, but because they had this improvement despite the fact that their marquee free agent signing barely contributed.
Mm-hmm. And then you had Valanciunas missing 20-something games as well, too, right? So, I think it's so tough to just be like, hey, this team struggled in this 4-game or like 7-game sample, and then that's the reason why things happen in playoff series, especially last season. Like, the team just wasn't suited to his style, and Lowry was just a shell of himself. Like, he could barely move out there. You could tell, like, he wasn't, you know, shooting at all. He wasn't, you know, drawing free throws. Like, he was a disaster in the playoffs. Yeah. And to like pin all that on Casey, when, you know, a big reason why Lowry went down eventually was that he was carrying such a heavy load earlier in the season as a result of another injury to a star player. Like, I feel like that'd be kind of tough to put that on Casey, and it was more of a function of the personnel than the actual, you know, his coaching itself.
Yeah, I think Lowry was worn down mentally and physically toward the end of the last year. He was obviously hurt in the playoffs, and that's just not the case anymore. And that's probably the biggest difference in terms of one specific player. DeRozan's obviously gotten better this year, but if you just look at the numbers that Lowry put up in the second half of this season, compare them to last year, like, it's night and day. And a lot of that you have to credit him because of what he did in the offseason, but also it's like the makeup of the team is different. Corey Joseph's presence changes a lot of things, and Lowry doesn't always have to guard that star point guard that you see most nights in the NBA at the end of the game. And I really think that you look at this series versus Indiana, and you can't, Like you said, you can't base everything on that. There's a ton of pressure for them to win now, obviously. And I do think if they did lose this series, it would be kind of similar to last summer, in that whatever Masai Ujiri did, you would kind of be like, okay. Like, I think he would have the latitude to make sweeping changes if the Raptors lost in the postseason in terms of altering their core. The same could have been said last year, and he elected to bring back the core, make changes to the rest of the rotation, make changes to the assistant coaching staff. And I think those have proven to be pretty good decisions based on how the regular season went. And I really do think that they have a different makeup than they did this time last year and the year before. They've experienced the playoffs before. Even the guys that they signed, that they brought in, with the exception of Biombo, I guess, like, these guys have played in the playoffs. They know what it's like. And I don't see them having a ton of trouble with this Pacers team, as long as the Pacers don't discover some magical offensive formula like the Wizards did last year in the playoffs.
They don't have Randy Whitman, so we don't have to worry about that. just in terms of the Pacers then, like, for maybe people who don't really watch a ton of the Pacers, like, what can people sort of expect from them in terms of style and aesthetics? Because I guess the big thing coming into the season was they were going to, you know, go with this pace and space thing. And they took care of the pace, but, like, the space kind of isn't really there at this point. They have, like, three guys who are legitimate three-point shooters right now. Miles Turner is, I guess, starting to figure it out, but I'm not sure how much you can ever count on a rookie in a playoff series. And we'll talk about that with Norman Powell in a little bit. Yeah. But, what can people sort of expect from what the Pacers will throw at the Raptors?
Okay, this has been a really strange year for the Indiana Pacers. They started off their first few games, and you were kind of wondering what the hell they did in the summer. The first game of the season they played in Toronto, I think maybe they scored 86 points in that game. And it just seemed like they weren't really fit to do the small ball thing. And it's interesting because this wasn't any sort of secret that they were going to play this way. Larry Bird was talking about it as soon as the season ended last year. I talked to CJ Miles before that first game, and he said he spent the whole summer getting in shape to just run and to shoot a ton of threes. But what the Pacers didn't do is really fill out the roster in a way that made it ideal to play 48 minutes of that style. Paul George did not want to guard opposing power forwards. He did not want to do that every night. And I don't really blame a star player that has to do as much as he does offensively for not wanting to do that. But what that meant was they had to play CJ Miles at the four a lot. And I don't know if you've ever like stood next to CJ Miles. He's a good athlete, but he is not like a big, bulky NBA power forward, like far from it. And I think he fights really hard in those situations. I think he tries to make those guys pay on the other end when he's matched up with a big guy. But I don't think he's your prototypical, yeah, we'll just slide him up to the four, no problem. So
yeah,
they're in the midst of sort of an identity crisis. I think they know what kind of team they want to be, but they just didn't have the personnel to do that all the time. Frank Vogel's changed the starting lineup a bunch of times. Personally, I think they're better when they actually have two big men out there, and I think the numbers kind of bear that out. But you'll see both looks from them. I would say the most impressive thing is what they have managed to do is even when increasing the pace, they've remained a really solid defensive team. They have really good perimeter defenders in George Hill and Paul George. And on the inside, they have some physical big men. I think Jan Mahimi has had an impressive year stepping into that starting role. Miles Turner, I love that guy. I think he is... he has some serious star potential because he can step out and shoot the three. He doesn't do it very often, but his stroke is really good. And then he can also block shots at the rim, and he's pretty athletic and nimble for a guy his size. I think he's had a much better rookie season than everybody expected. But to what you said about Turner, yeah, I don't know how much you can necessarily expect from him in the playoffs. It wouldn't be surprising to me at all if he played well. But at the same time, if you really watch him, like, he's not that sharp in terms of his defensive rotations. He does make mistakes. He'll sort of make up for them by getting back and using his length to block shots sometimes. But I think those kind of players often, like, they'll get in foul trouble in the playoffs, or they'll get frustrated. And I'm not saying that'll necessarily happen to Turner. You could see one game where he's really the story and wins them a game. But I think the Raptors have more players that are kind of sure things than the Pacers do. And one thing about this Indiana team is they've had a tendency to get frustrated at various points in the year. They've had some perplexing losses, some blowout losses, and you've kind of wondered, like, do they really know who they are? I'm not sure that they do.
Man, if you look at, like, some of the stories coming out of Indiana over the last couple of weeks, it's been, like, pandemonium. They're, like, they just think this team is terrible. Just a lot of the columns and things like that is just panic about, they were sort of always going to make the playoffs because the Bulls were, you know, kind of awful, and there was enough of a cushion there. But people seemed really worried that they might slip out, and there was just sort of questions about where the team was going. It's funny you mentioned that, like, Turner struggles defensively a little bit, but, like, you are totally right in terms of, like, their best lineup right now by far is, or the two best lineups by far feature two big men. It's Jan Mahimi with Lavoie Allen and Jan Mahimi with Miles Turner, right, plus the three perimeter guys, and those are their two most used lineups and two of their most effective ones, right?
Which is, like, not what they planned on doing at all, but...
Not at all, because the one with CJ Miles, it checks out as well. They're a -6.7 per 100 possessions right now, and just, like, a disaster on defense and can't really score when CJ Miles is at the four. And that's in a pretty big sample of 333 minutes as well, so...
But I do think one thing that's interesting, though, is, like, things change in the playoffs, and...
Yeah.
You saw the Wizards go small for not the entire time, but a lot of the time against the Raptors last year. And I'm not sure that's what the Pacers are necessarily going to do, but I do think that is a move that Vogel can make. And I think in a series against the Raptors where their power forwards are Luis Scola, Patrick Patterson, sometimes Damari Carroll, I don't think Paul George is necessarily going to have a problem guarding the power forward in this series. It's not like he's going up against Zach Randolph. So
yeah, for sure.
I could see that lineup being used perhaps more, and I could see it being more effective in this specific matchup than it was over the course of an 82-game regular season where the team didn't totally buy into it.
Fair enough. I guess the counter to that is if the Raptors go small and decide to go with Patterson and Carroll as the 3 and 4, or even just the smaller lineup with the two point guards, DeRozan and either Carroll or Patterson. I mean, Patterson's not exactly small, but I think Patterson is good enough that he can guard George one-on-one. I think DeRozan proved in his last game that if he's engaged, he can probably do it enough to sort of get in George's way a little bit. I mean, George is going to get his, but I think the Raptors just have a ton of different like options in terms of defending George, because Carroll, I mean, we're not really sure what he still looks kind of slow to me, especially on defense. Like offensively, he looks like he's fitting in fine. The defensive end, I mean, Nick Stauskas blew by him for a dunk on Tuesday, and it was like, oh, okay, that's a little worrisome. But I think the Raptors have a lot of different options where they can throw, even like if Biombo's out there, they can switch Biombo onto George for a possession or two and just sort of throw a bunch of different looks at him and not tire one guy out too much in terms of guarding Paul George.
Yeah, I think they'll give George, I mean, this is what Casey always says about good offensive players, but I mean, he said it about George, and it's going to be the plan. They're going to give him a lot of different looks. I think they'll single cover him sometimes. They'll double team him sometimes. They'll change the way they guard the pick and roll. They'll change who his primary defender is. And I think the idea is to just not let him get comfortable. And I think ideally, if Damari Carroll was completely healthy, you would assume, okay, when Carroll's on the court against him, you're pretty much going to have Carroll guard him one-on-one and have everybody else stay at home. And I think that'll happen some of the time, but we'll kind of find out how much they can get away with that.
For sure. You mentioned this earlier, just how the Raptors have a lot of different pieces and versatility. And I just feel like any move that Indiana makes, Toronto has a different counter that they can make. It's not like last year, like you were talking about with the Wizards, where the Wizards went small and the Raptors had James Johnson and nothing else to sort of counter it. And like this year, there's just so many more options, especially with the emergence of Patterson as a multi-positional defender. And I just think that's where Toronto's real advantage in this series comes from, because like anytime Vogel wants to make a different move, I think the Raptors have something in the bag to counter it. And that's partly due to, the extra pieces they have on the end of the bench as well. I mean, Jason Thompson could slide in for Luis Scola and sort of improve the defensive mobility of the four there. Norman Powell could come in and be another one of those guys that they throw against George. I mean, I think he's too small to guard George, but you could be another guy that you can use to defend on the wing. Like, there are a lot of different pieces that Casey has, and while rotations are small, I could see a lot of different like 5-minute stretches where guys who normally wouldn't get into the lineup or the rotation on a consistent basis really play a part.
Yeah, to me, like when I'm trying to think of like scenarios where the Raptors could lose, it's like, okay, the role players just have to completely disappear. And if that's what happens and these guys just can't make open shots and they lose their confidence, then sure. But I think the bench has just been so solid all year. That's the way they've been beating teams. They just had a way stronger second unit than other teams have. They've been better with the bench than they have with the starters all season long. And I'm not sure that advantage will be as pronounced come playoff time, but I do think they're just so much deeper than Indiana that they should be able to get productive minutes from these guys. And, you know, maybe Patterson, Joseph, Ross, Biombo, and Powell won't all be great in the same game, but I think as long as you have a few of them playing well, and especially them playing well in the defensive end, then I think you have an advantage when the Pacers go to their bench.
Yeah, I'm curious what you think about Luis Scola and the role he plays in this series, because like Dwayne Casey is very dedicated to him. I think that the last little bit in the season here, we've sort of seen him go away from a little bit. He's played fewer minutes in the games he has played. He's sat a few. Jason Thompson started pretty routinely down the stretch here again with Valanciunas. I think Casey's probably going to start him still. I don't really see that changing. I think he's just going to stick with the continuity and what's worked. But I think the leash has got to be like ridiculously short, no?
Yeah, I think his minutes will be cut. And I want to defend Scola for a second, because he's played like an interesting role for the Raptors this year.
Yeah,
and I think he's a guy that plays really hard, and he's a better defender than he should be when you look at how like his his lack of any sort of hops or athleticism, or he's not fast at this stage of his career. But he manages to get those defensive rebounds all the time. He's a good passer. He's developed this 3-point shot, which nobody saw coming. I don't want to say like Scola had like a terrible year or anything. I think
he's
really fit in with this team, and I think everybody's happy that they signed him. But yeah, I mean, he's never been a great fit with Valanciunas at all.
That's been the issue, right? That's where the struggles have come.
Yeah,
like he's been fine. Like I thought all season he'd be totally fine on the second unit playing with Corey Joseph and Patterson and Biombo. Sorry, not Patterson, but with Biombo and Joseph. Yeah. Like I. I've always thought that was a better fit, and maybe we aren't having this conversation about how much of a liability he can be defensively if he gets that opportunity more often.
Right. So you might see him in different lineups than you saw during the regular season. That wouldn't surprise me. But it also wouldn't surprise me if he just didn't play that much, because I think when the Pacers do go to the four, then it's like you're thinking like, okay, where can we hide Scola? Like, do you put him on like the CJ Miles if he's on the court, or do you try, like, it just gets really tough. And I think, you know, the Pacers know Scola. They've had him for the past couple of years, and they know, like, if he's on the court, they're going to try to take advantage by putting, like, trying to get him to switch on to smaller guys that are faster than him, or trying to put him in pick and roll situations. Like, that'll happen. But I do think he can still contribute. I do think he'll still play, but I think there's a reason why we saw Jason Thompson getting minutes toward the end of the season. I think Casey wanted to see what he could do and if he could put him in the rotation when they needed him in the playoffs. And I think he'll probably see some time. And I think Damari Carroll will definitely see time at the four in this series. And I think they know, like, Casey has seen all of the numbers that every Raptor fan has seen about how effective Patrick Patterson has been this year. And they know he's been their best power forward. And so I would continue to expect Patterson to be on the floor late in games, unless they go smaller than that and have Carroll at the four with like the 2 point guards and Damar. And yeah, I wouldn't be that worried about if you're freaking out about the net, like Scola's net rating or whatever. Like, I don't see him playing like even like 20 minutes a game in this series. Like, I think it'll be lower than that.
Oh, I honestly think it'll be sort of the pattern that Casey's had lately, where it'll be the first 5 minutes or so of the game, and then Patterson comes in even earlier if there's a sign of trouble, because I don't think the Raptors really want to go through another poor start in game one, for example. They've had that the last couple of years. And then I think he probably doesn't play a ton until, you know, maybe sometime in the second quarter against the second unit. Yeah. And then, like, he comes in and starts with the guys that started the third, and then doesn't really play for the rest of the game. I could see that sort of being the pattern with him. And then if he's being especially taken advantage of in a matchup, I think Thompson quickly comes in or starts the third quarter or something like that. I think the leash has got to be thin, like, got to be short, because, like, there is a serious matchup problem if they do go small, like you mentioned. But, yeah, like, his offense is still sort of, like, it's sort of weird how much of a boon that offense has been in first quarters this year. It's been bizarre.
Yeah, but I do think also if the Pacers are going big and killing the Raptors in the glass, then yeah, boom, put Scola in. Like, they'll just,
yeah,
they'll do that. And they have that option there. And I understand why it was such a topic over the course of the season, but I do think for a 56-win team, like, it was never that big a deal.
Yeah, the Raptors were good enough where they could overcome any sort of deficit they came into in the first part of the game if Scola struggled.
Yeah.
Like, they proved that over the course of the year. I want to ask you about Jan Mahimi, because I feel like, honestly, I feel like a lot of people don't really watch the Pacers. I didn't watch the Pacers a ton this year, I got to admit. Like, I think that they still had some stink from them last year where I just refused to watch them because they were so awful without Paul George. Like, Jan Mahimi's improved a lot this season, both as a rim protector, but even more so as, like, a functional part of the Pacers' offense. What kind of importance do you think he's going to have for the Pacers in this series?
Yeah, I would sort of see him as playing a similar type of role as a Biombo, except he'll do a little bit more in terms of, like, he'll make passes that Biombo probably wouldn't see. But he's not, like, look, he's not like a Vlade Divac, like, at the top of the key, or an Andrew Bogut that's, like, they're using him as, like, the hub of their offense. Like, he's basically a rebounder, a very good screen setter, a good finisher, a guy you can throw an alley-oop to, and a guy that can protect the basket. And he always did that, and for years he was sort of doing a Roy Hibbert impression behind Roy Hibbert, as in they could play the same way when Hibbert went to the bench, and he would use that whole principle of verticality thing that Hibbert made famous and just kind of play that
Scola taught him, by the way.
Yes.
That Scola taught him.
So he's not doing anything radically different to me this year. He's just, I think he's stepped up and played the role better than most people thought that he would. And sure, of course, when you look at the Pacers being third in the league in defensive efficiency, you think, oh yeah, well, they have this wing stopper in Paul George, and George Hill has the size and strength and speed that most point guards don't have on the defensive end. But you also have to give Mahimi a lot of credit for that because of the way that he operates in Frank Vogel's system. You know, he'll hang back, he'll protect the basket, but he's also a pretty good pick and roll defender. Like, I think he is proven himself to be, you know, not necessarily like a great starting center, but certainly a reliable one.
Yeah, that said, I think Jonas Valanciunas could really have himself a series here. I think we've seen over the course of the year, he seems to excel against centers, like more traditional type centers who aren't going to exploit him defensively by being able to stretch the floor or go to the three-point line.
Right.
Like, you're not going to see Valanciunas jumping out at a Jan Mahimi three pump fake like Brook Lopez,
hopefully at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully not. So, like, what do you think Valanciunas can do in this series? Because I think, especially, I mean, the Pacers aren't exactly an aggressive defense, and they might not decide to blitz the pick and roll with Lowry or DeRozan operating. But if they do that, I think that leaves Valanciunas as a pretty big target there in the middle that they can sort of use to exploit that. Like, what do you think Valanciunas can do?
Yeah, I think he might be the most under-discussed storyline going into the series. Maybe you think differently because, like, you run a Raptors blog, so everything is discussed in detail.
Yeah.
But to me, I mean, that has not been sort of a major topic of discussion, I think, for a lot of people around this team and for just about this season. And I think his improvement has been overshadowed by the improvement of the two players in the backcourt that we all know and love, and the emergence of Norman Powell and the improvement of Patrick Patterson and Corey Joseph and Biombo making this big impact. But I think this is a much better player than we saw this time last year. I think on the defensive end, he's made strides, and offensively, what he's done recently, I mean, it's obvious. He's growing and growing. His development has been, I wouldn't say slow, but there hasn't been that one big breakout year.
It's been methodical.
Yeah, it seems like entering the season, he's like on everybody's list, like, oh, this could be his all-star turn. And it hasn't happened. But to look at that and say, well, he hasn't improved enough, that's not fair. I mean, Valanciunas is a really, really good player, and I'm not sure that people outside of Toronto quite appreciate that. But, I mean, it would not surprise me if he has some, like, 26-point, 15-rebound game in the playoffs, and then suddenly it's like, well, where did this guy come from? And that's when Raptors fans say, well, like, no, he's, like, finished the season really well, and he's had some big defensive games, too. There was the one game where he had, like, 6 or 7 blocks that stood out, but it's not even really just the blocks. Like, what the Raptors have been looking for him to do all along is to become a better pick-and-roll defender and to improve his timing on his rotations. And he's not perfect. He's not as good as Biombo, which is why you sometimes see Biombo on the court at the end of games. You see Casey going offense, defense, but it's different than it was in the past. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think a big part of that, too, and just the sort of overlooking of him and his improvement, is a lot of his best games of the season have come down the stretch, and, like, he's really sort of crescendoed as the season has came down to the wire. And, I mean, people, I think, kind of tuned out for the last month or two because the games didn't really mean a ton, and the Raptors had such a cushion. And I think people just sort of looked at the team 2 months ago and were like, yeah, this is the team that's going to the playoffs and anything, and, like, I think the improvement of Valanciunas has been so drastic over the last little while here that that's sort of been overlooked for that reason.
But I also think that's kind of nice because I think there was always a lot of pressure on him. It's sort of similar to with Terrence Ross. So there was always a lot of pressure on Ross to, like, be that guy. And there's so much less on Terrence Ross now that he's a backup. And I think there's so much less on Valanciunas just because the team is deeper. So he's able to kind of improve in the background without people wondering, like, why isn't he better yet? Or why isn't he playing more minutes? And, like, he is playing more minutes now and he's earned them. And I think part of that has been because, like, he's been allowed to do that. And he's not been under the microscope the same way this year when the team has been winning and when other people have provided storylines as he was in years past.
One thing I'm curious about with this series, given how good defenders of Paul George and George Hill are, I'm already sick of talking about this team with the before and after of all the names. Like, George Hill, Paul George.
The three Hills on the team.
I know, there's three Hills, there's CJ Miles Turner, there's, like, I'm so done already. But just in terms of how good, like, Paul George and George Hill are in terms of wing defense, like, I think they're going to hassle DeMar and Kyle off the ball a lot. I think they're going to deny them the ball a lot, especially DeMar. I think George could really sort of give him problems. I'm curious what you think about Damari Carroll and Patrick Patterson's role as like secondary ball handlers and creators in this series, because I think that's going to be important. And I'm not, that's like the one area of the Raptors right now where I'm not entirely feeling confident. I think Patterson has sort of improved over the course of the year in terms of his ability to create when he's asked to, and in terms of his driving ability. He still has weird clunky floaters, but they're fewer and further between at this point. And Carroll, he's still sort of getting acclimated back into the team and the way things are going and the way things run. And I don't know. That's like the one area where I'm worried that if they're asked to create and be secondary ball handlers, if Lowry and DeRozan are being denied the ball or getting doubled, what do you think they can do there? Because I think that could be a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Patrick Patterson is not Draymond Green. And
no,
if he was, then like this team would have won 60 something games. Like he is fine to make basic moves off the dribble. He works on those floaters that you're talking about a lot. I'm comfortable with him making plays in like a sort of 4-on-3 scenario after a pick and roll. But I think the most important thing for him is that he's just making that outside shot. As for Damari Carroll as a secondary playmaker, I mean, we've seen it. Like last year in the playoffs, he was Atlanta's best offensive player before he got hurt. He was putting up huge games against good defensive teams in the playoffs. And I think he's more than capable. I think he also wants people to know that he's not just a defensive player. I think the problem is we just don't know if he's going to be able to do that right now, because we haven't seen him fully healthy all year. In these recent games that he's played, I thought he's fit in fine.
Yeah, but totally.
I haven't seen him move the same way he did when he was with the Hawks last year, especially in those early rounds of the playoffs. And I think his teammates will have confidence in him making those plays, but I'm not in a position where I know how many of those games he's going to be able to have where he actually makes an impact with the ball in his hands running screen roll. I know that was part of the plan. They wanted to have him be another guy that could make plays for them. Not to the extent where he's like a point forward or anything like that. Everybody knows that Lowry and DeRozan are going to be doing most of the ball handling and creating on the team. But I think he was going to do more of that. It's just, I'm not sure if he can do that right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I can envision him like blowing by someone on a closeout right now. Like just watching him, he doesn't seem like he's like favoring a knee or anything, but it does seem like he's just sort of getting his legs back under him. And I'm not sure if the three games were enough. Maybe they were. And I mean, he played 21 minutes against Philly on Tuesday and he looked really good. And the team was like a plus 30 with him on the floor. So those are all positive signs. But yeah, in terms of, you know, that next level of being able to create and drive and kick out, like I'd like to see it before I'm going to like count on it happening.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, if he comes out in game one of the playoffs and he does that, then people are all of a sudden going to be very excited about the fact that he's on this team.
Yeah, no, like, and I think people still should be, because I think you look at, like, I was going through today and just sort of looking at potential closing lineups the Raptors could have, and having Carroll in the fold, there's like 6-7 different possible looks they could go with him there. And just the versatility that he provides. And they were talking about this on the Raptors Republic preview, and the idea of a Patrick Patterson at center with Carroll at the four, DeRozan, Joseph, and Lowry lineup, and it depends, obviously, what Indiana has to counter, but that is all kinds of intriguing to me as a lineup that could just sort of torch a team if they're not going to get killed on the boards.
Then you are asking Patrick Patterson to beat Draymond Green, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's not going to stop this. He's like a impoverished guy outside the Rogers Centers version of Draymond Green. Yes? No?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
He doesn't have that high profile a corner. No, he's further away from downtown.
I do think he can capably play the center for small stretches, especially if the other team is going to kind of match that way.
Yeah, it totally depends on what Indiana's throwing out there. And if like they're going to throw out Mahinmi, maybe not. I don't know if he can really match the rebounding there.
Yeah, I will say that this year's version of Patterson is more equipped to do that in years past. Because I think he's just been more aggressive in terms of going for like blocking shots on the defensive end and getting rebounds. And I think just been more willing to like kind of take contact inside.
Yeah, for sure. I've been very impressed with Patterson this season.
Great.
I think he's made some ridiculous improvements. Like defensively, like is really where they've all come because the shots actually kind of fallen off.
Yeah.
But defensively, he's been so great to watch. Lastly, before we get to a couple of listener questions, I want to ask you about Norman Powell. People love Norman Powell. I love Norman Powell. He's probably going to win Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month, you would think, given he scored almost 16 points a game. I think he shot like 53.5% from three in the few games in April. He was really impressive down the stretch in some pretty meaningless games. I'm not sold on, like with Miles Turner, I'm not totally sold on Powell being like some sort of savior in the playoffs. I think he can probably play a few minutes here and there in certain looks, but I don't know. What kind of role do you expect Powell to have in the playoffs? Do you think he even gets any run at all?
I think he'll absolutely play. Casey said that he's going to be in the rotation. It wouldn't surprise me if he still started. I don't know. I think that depends more on like how Carroll is feeling, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if Powell was the starter tomorrow afternoon. He's going to play. I don't think he's going to be asked to do a lot offensively, but also that's kind of partially why he's been so good offensively, is other guys get attention. And, you know, the scouting report's different now, I think, because he shot like 40% on threes. People are actually closing out on him now. He actually, when I was talking to him, he kind of laughed when I asked him, like, are you noticing that guys are respecting your shot more? And he's like, yeah, like I hear coaches yelling shooter when I get the ball on the 3-point line, which didn't used to happen. Like, we'll see if the Pacers are going to be willing to surrender those shots to him and make him prove it in a playoff setting, or if they're going to try to close out on him. And we've seen when people do close out on him, he's just so quick, so athletic, and so strong. He can get to the basket. So I think he's the kind of guy that he's going to play pretty much the same way in the playoffs. I don't know that he's going to have as many opportunities with the ball to put up like big numbers like he's done recently. But yeah, I think he's going to be in there. I think they're going to use him.
Also, I think if Terrence Ross shows the sort of trepidation he has in playoff series in the past, I think that leash is probably kind of short too, and Powell could easily step in like with just the regular bench unit and play instead of Ross. Do you think that's a possibility as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I necessarily think the leash will be short, because I just think Ross's role is so much different now. Like he's coming in with the bench unit, and I think he'll shoot his threes confidently, and I think he'll kind of do what he's done for most of the year. Like I view this, the addition of Carroll and the emergence of Norman Powell have totally changed the expectations on Terrence Ross and the pressure on Terrence Ross. And I think he's also just learned from years past, and I doubt he's that worried about it. Like I get what you're saying. And I think that's something the Raptors fans will certainly be looking at, is like, can Ross lift this team or give them something that he hasn't given them in playoffs past? But I don't think he needs to have even four good games for them to win four times. And I think that's different. I think he had to before.
Yeah, I'm with you there too. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, you don't really know, right? Like things happen in a playoff series and they just sort of crop up.
I want to, before we totally move on, one name we haven't mentioned on Indiana's side is Solomon Hill. He's sort of looked at as kind of the same, like maybe a hybrid between like a Damari Carroll and a Norman Powell, maybe. I don't know. Like he's not this like high priced acquisition, and he's not this rookie that came out of nowhere, but he's this really reliable wing defender. He's improved as a shooter. He can, you know, he can slide up and play the four a little bit, and he's had a really good season for them. And he's a name that won't get a lot of attention, but I'm absolutely sure he will spend some time guarding DeMar DeRozan. It won't just be Paul George, and that's not going to be a super easy time for DeRozan.
Yeah, we did a Q&A with Tom Lewis from IndieCornrows.com on our site, and he mentioned Solomon Hill as sort of an X factor and someone who he's probably going to play a lot of the four. He did that down the stretch when Miles Turner moved to the bench, if I'm not mistaken. And And yeah, that's I'm glad you brought him up, because that's someone who Indiana people seem to be sort of counting on as someone who can just kind of add to that base of sort of weird, awkward wings and fours that they have. So I guess so you seem to think the Raptors are going to take this one. You said in six. Is that your prediction here?
Yeah, I went with six. I hate predictions. I have to make them for every series, and I whatever, I'll do it. I will be on it, like, the way I was leaning, if I was going to, like, say, it wasn't, like, between six and seven. It was between, like, six and, like, maybe they can do it in, like, five or four. I'm always a bit nervous of, like, coming off as, like, a homer because I live in Toronto. And so maybe I just chickened out of saying the Raptors would dominate. But, yeah, I went with six games. I do think the way that Indiana plays, if they can just avoid fouling the Raptors a million times, which was a huge problem for them in the regular season, then I think they're capable of getting a couple of games from Toronto. But when I look at the overall picture, I'm just not that confident in this Pacers team.
Yeah, I like what you guys normally do on your podcast, and you just sort of look at, you know, the players in the series, and you look at, you know, who's the best player in the series. And I think Kyle Lowry is probably the best player in the series.
But that's funny, because most people would say Paul George is.
See, yeah, I don't know. I think if you look on, like, impact that they've had this season, I would go Lowry. What would you go?
I'd go Lowry for this year. But yeah, I think once the playoffs start, sometimes you throw out the season and you say, all right, they have a 6'10 small forward who can play some power forward, create his own shot, and is one of the very best defenders in the league at his position. Like, that's pretty valuable. And now what we don't know is if Paul George is going to play the way he did in the playoffs 2 years ago, and if he's going to play the way he did in the regular season in, like, the second half of November and into December, or whether he is going to miss a lot of outside shots, miss a lot of, like, long twos and threes and force the issue sometimes and turn the ball over sometimes. We don't know how he's going to handle being in the playoffs, carrying the load that he's carried offensively, and probably spending a lot of time on DeMar DeRozan. Now, if he went nuts and had a bunch of huge games, like, okay, he's done that before. He's done that against LeBron James. Mm-hmm. So that wouldn't shock me. But what I would say is that going into the series, the question of who is the best player in the series is kind of complicated. And we don't actually know.
Yeah.
Like, we really don't know who will be the best player actually in these games that are about to be played. I would say Lowry is a pretty good bet based on how he's played this season. But if you were going to say, yeah, Paul George is the best player in the series, then, like, I wouldn't necessarily argue with that.
Right. Right. And then, so yeah, if you look at the third best player, I think that's pretty clearly DeMar DeRozan. And then the fourth, it gets interesting at number four, because I think there's an argument to be made that it's Jonas Valanciunas, but that totally depends on what you think about Monte Ellis and George Hill. Where do you fall on that?
I would not put Monte Ellis there, not the way he's played this year.
Yeah.
But George Hill is really good. And the trouble with George Hill is, over the course of his career, he's been this really, like, reliable, steady guy who is, like, pretty good at everything, but maybe not as aggressive as you'd want him to be, maybe not as much of an offensive threat as you'd want it to be, until last year, when Paul George wasn't around, when everybody counted the Pacers out, and when they really needed George Hill to be that guy, and when they put the ball in his hands. Then he had the best season of his career, and I think he was awesome. And he's still capable of that. It's just that's not really how the Pacers play. So I think he'll be solid, and I just think the presence of Monte Ellis has sort of made him less effective and less productive than he would be otherwise. And I think one thing Pacers have to make this decision is, how do we want to use Monte Ellis? How do we want to use George Hill? Hell, how do we want to use Ty Lawson, who is, like, the forgotten man, but is still on this Pacers roster? And in my mind, George Hill could easily be that fourth best player in the series. But if he plays the same role that he's played for the regular season, then I'd say, yeah, it's Valanciunas.
Yeah. George Hill is really good. And, like, I think he's going to really hassle Kyle Lowry in this series. I don't know. I'm with you, though. I think just the talent disparity, I think, I mean, we talked about these top four or five guys, and you can make an argument either way for number one or number four or whatever for the power rankings of players in the series. But I think it's when you get past that into sort of the deeper parts of the roster, that's where the Raptors just have such a huge advantage in terms of guys who are not only talented, but are really, really good at a specific thing. And I think, you know, Terrence Ross is maybe a better shooter than anybody on that team. And Patrick Patterson's a very good shooter. And Jabari Carroll's an excellent, I think the shooting is going to be there's just going to be a math issue for Indiana in this series. If they can't get a couple guys to get hot, because the Raptors up and down the roster, I mean, this was kind of an issue coming into the season. And when Jabari Carroll was out, they didn't really have a ton of shooting, but now you look and, you know, Lowry's an above average 3-point shooter. And like I said, Carroll and Patterson and Ross and now Norman Powell, these guys can all shoot. And, you know, DeMar DeRozan's almost at 35% on the year too, right? So I think that's sort of where it differentiates the deep sort of roster depth. And I think the shooting for the Raptors is going to be a big advantage in this series. I have the Raptors in five. Maybe I come off as a homer, and I probably am more of a homer than you would probably be, but I think I had the Raptors in five against the Wizards last year too, so this could be totally wrong and come crashing down. But
what you just said about the shooting gets to exactly why I picked the Raptors to win the series, is because the Pacers are one of those teams, and I think you can be one of those teams and be good. I say Oklahoma City is one of these teams where they have to make decisions about lineups where they have to compromise. Where they have to say, if we want to get a stop, we have to play these players who can't shoot at all. Or if we really need to make up some ground and get some buckets, we need to play these players who cannot play any defense.
Just add Andre Roberson and Deion Waiters, would you, James?
How about Cantor? How about everyone? Too, yeah. How about all of their role players, pretty much? Except for Cameron. Yeah. That guy's great. But I think when you look at Indiana, there are lineups where they could be like, all right, this is our stretchiest lineup. And we have LaVoy Allen at the five who can make a mid-range shot, or even Miles Turner at the five. Sure. And then you have Paul George, you have CJ Miles, you have George Hill. And then I don't know who the fifth shooter would be.
Rodney Stuckey, or I guess he's not a great shooter, but
I don't even, I honestly don't even know who I'd throw in there.
So their stretchiest lineup isn't even.
Yeah, that's the thing. I can't. I'm not even. I have to look at their percentages and see. It's not Ellis. I'll say that. But maybe it. Here, I'll get. Maybe it is Ellis. And then what you do is Ellis is basically the point guard, and you have George Hill at the two, and you just run high pick and roll with Ellis all the time. And I think that is the most effective way to use Monte Ellis. That's what Dallas did. That's why he was great there offensively. And you say, this is how we're going to be a not terrible offensive team, because they've been a pretty bad offensive team all year. I think that would mostly work. But the problem with that lineup is that all of a sudden the ball isn't in Paul George's hands as much offensively. And all of a sudden that is not a great defensive group at all. Mm-hmm. And what the Raptors don't have to do is really make those decisions. I mean, obviously Biombo is not a plus offensive player, but I think he's better than a lot of people thought he would be on the offensive end in Toronto. But beyond that, you pretty much have two-way players at every spot. And the Pacers don't have that. So that's sort of what both of us were talking about before in terms of versatility and just the moves that Casey can make. But I just think if Vogel runs out of moves in this series, it doesn't even necessarily mean that he's been outcoached or anything. It just means this is a roster they have. And they're not that versatile. And they don't have that much shooting, and they've chosen to be a defensive team, and it can get them, it can make things tough on the Raptors, but I think it's going to be hard for them to figure out how to get the bucket that they'll need to upset this Toronto team.
Right. All right, James, I think that pretty much does it for picking apart this series. We will take a quick break here. On the other side, we will get to a couple questions, and we might just do questions and the episode sponsor all in one segment, because that was a really long one. That's what we'll do. That's okay. We brought you on because you're intelligent, and we need intelligent people up in here because we're usually lacking that. I just totally just outed everyone else I usually do the podcast with. Sorry, guys.
Next segment is all poop jokes, though.
Yeah. Can't wait. All right, we'll be back in just a second with some poop jokes. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with James Herbert of CBSSports.com. We're going to do a sort of smush together segment here. We're going to do a few questions, and then we're going to get to the episode sponsor.
In honor of Smush Parker.
Oh, Smush Parker. If he was a former Raptor, he would 100% be the episode sponsor every week. His tweets this week were beautiful.
Were they really him?
Not, I don't know.
The account wasn't verified, so I was wondering, like,
why would Smush Parker's account be verified?
I mean, that's a great question, but I don't know. I was wondering myself, because I was thinking, like, would anybody actually go to the trouble of making a fake Smush Parker account and then tweeting disparaging things about Kobe Bryant? And then I thought, yes, of course. Of course there are people who would do that with their time.
But it had just enough followers where it's like, this isn't just some weird Twitter egg who made a Smush Parker-related account. Like, this is someone, this is Smush Parker. He's got, like, enough of a following. It was, like, 900 people, right? Like,
yeah.
It wasn't a fake person's following. It wasn't, like, a random, like, Woj fake account with, like, 30
like,
followers.
Like, Woj Vertical NBA.
Yeah. Yeah. Woj Vertical NBA, yeah. Okay, this first question here, this was from Tuesday, and we forgot to get to it. This is from David Mann, at David Mann CDN. What's the better, like, this is sort of asking as a fan, I suppose, but this would be, like, what's the better situation for the Raptors? Would the Raptors have rather made it past the first round last season, plus kept Grievous Vasquez and Lou Williams, or what actually happened, and them obviously losing in terrible fashion, and those guys being traded and or leaving via free agency? I think Lou Williams probably would have been gone anyway, but maybe the Vasquez trade doesn't happen. I think it's pretty easily the second one, and I think the situation the Raptors are in right now with, you know, the Norman Powell and an extra first-round pick coming next year with Vasquez being out, like, I think it's kind of well. I think last year's loss was just sort of a good tell of where this team, where that roster was at and what it was missing and how flawed it actually was.
Yeah.
And maybe if they make it past the first round, maybe why, like, large scale changes don't happen. And maybe there isn't the effort to improve the defense that was there. And maybe a guy like Lou Williams does get a contract offer if he carries them through a game or two in a series. I don't know, but I think what happened is definitely a lot better for this team.
Yeah. Unquestionably, that was one of the best trades in Raptors history. And yeah, getting a first and getting Norman Powell, who is better than most firsts that you'll get as well.
He's already
with the 46th pick in the draft.
Yeah. He's already the best first round pick the Raptors have ever had. Like, in terms of, like, PJ Tucker's obviously pick, had a longer career. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. Like, PJ Tucker's obviously had a longer career. And on the whole has been a better player than Powell over the course of their careers.
Let's not disrespect Matt Bonner here.
What was he? I don't think he was a Raptors second rounder. Was he?
I think he was.
Oh, he might have.
I think
been
he was a second rounder, and then he played overseas for a year, and then he came over.
Oh, okay, that makes sense then. But yeah, like, Norman Powell is no Tomislav Zubcic. He's he's already one of the best second rounders in team history.
Yes.
And, like, the thing that's interesting to me with Powell is the way he's played and emerged. Like, I'm not sure this 3-point shooting can kind of continue the way it has because it's been ridiculous lately. But I'm curious if he sort of makes Terrence Ross expendable. I brought this up on the podcast before, but I think it's, like, a real possibility now. If the Raptors really want to do something in the offseason, it's probably not coming via free agency because there aren't that many names out there. And the only way to do it is via trade. And once the poison pill comes off of Terrence Ross's contract, that becomes pretty tradable and also something you can use to match salaries to bring in, you know, more of an impact player. So I think Powell definitely makes Ross an interesting, you know, sort of expendable possibility in the offseason. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there's more leverage in terms of, like, well, we could trade Terrence. He's fine in the role that he's playing if you're Masai. But I think he'd say, well, we could also go another direction and see what we can get for him. And I think that the contract that they gave to Terrence Ross was sort of controversial at the time. But I don't think it'll look that way when you see the contracts that are being given out this summer. And yeah, they're going to have options because I think Powell has proven he's a rotation player. I think he's the kind of guy that the Raptors want to keep around for a while. I'm not sure they'll be in a rush to trade Terrence Ross, but I do definitely think that will be an option. As for the actual question that was asked, like, yeah, I'd say unquestionably it's option B. It is exactly what happened. But what I will say also is that first scenario that was laid out when they win a first round series and everyone comes back, I don't think that was ever on the table. I think even if they had won a first round series, they're not bringing back both Lou Williams and Gravis Vasquez, because Dwayne Casey just would have pulled his hair out. I'm a big Lou Williams guy. Like, I thought he really did deserve to win sixth man. And
he won the Raptors, like, I don't know, like 8 or 9 games last season on his own.
Yeah, I mean, he camouflaged a lot of the Raptors' issues just based on the fact that he was so good at making three-point shots, getting to the line, never turning the ball over, and being a kind of one-man offense on the bench. And like, that's what he gives you. Like, he can just be your second unit offensively, essentially by himself. And that's efficient, and that works, and that's why he won Sixth Man of the Year. And I don't think he's as terrible a defender as he's cracked up to be. I think he does compete. I think he has good hands. I think he just, you know, he's often guarding guys that are bigger and stronger than him. He's often guarding guys that are faster than him, especially since the surgery that he had. But to me, Vasquez was a much bigger issue on defense, and Lou Williams was a little bit of a liability on that end. So even if they had won a playoff series, I just do not see a world where they bring both of them back. One of them, yeah, potentially, but I could not have seen both of them, even if they had swept the Wizards instead of the other way around.
Fair enough. This one comes from our fellow co-host, John Godis. John, I'm sorry I just disparaged you on the podcast in the last segment.
Are you really sorry?
Yes, I'm very sorry. I appreciate my colleagues. This question comes from John, first time, long time. How do you deal with playoff-related anxiety? I don't know. I guess you're not really a fan of a team, so this is a difficult question for you. Have you ever been like a fan of a team? Like, did you grow up being a fan of the Raptors at all? Or
I completely grew up a Raptors fan.
So how did you deal with like Vince Carter-related playoff anxiety back in the day?
I mean, I was young. It wasn't like I drank or anything.
that was going to be my answer. Just drink. But
I think you just kind of have to surrender yourself to the uncertainty of the time.
The anxiety is the best part of the playoffs.
Yeah. I
love it.
The wrong thing to do is to just keep your expectations low and say, well, whatever, they always lose, so they're going to lose. Because then you watch the game so on edge, and then whenever they screw anything up, you're just like, oh, there they go again. Like, I don't think that's fun. I think if you have the anxiety, just embrace it as a part of the experience and be as optimistic as you can, and also be as rational as you can. Like look at the team, look at what the Raptors did in the regular season. I'm assuming we're coming at this from a Raptors fan's perspective, not just a general NBA playoff anxiety. And like, this team won 56 games. Maybe watch the games that they played against the Pacers and see how, for the most part in those games, Toronto pretty much outclassed them. I just went to a Raptors game where they like rested everybody and still killed the Pacers. So I would kind of look at it that way and just brace for a long series, I'd say. Like, don't freak out too much. I would just expect the best and just go for it. And if you get your heart broken again, like, guess what? That's a part of sports.
There's another season, and maybe next time enjoy the 82 game run, because I feel like that's like, you make such a good point. Like, they won 56 games, and I feel like a lot of people, I think this is sort of told in the TV ratings and everything. I think a lot of people just sort of glossed over the regular season, which like I tried not to. I tried to enjoy every minute of it, because like, there was a lot of really fun things that happened this season. You had Kyle Lowry step back. You had, like, weird Bebe games. You had emergences from guys that you maybe didn't expect it from. And, like, there was Rudy, like, DeMar DeRozan dunking on Rudy Gobert's head.
Yes.
Like, that stuff is all part of the season. And to just, like, gloss over it and be like, oh, playoffs are bust, I don't really enjoy whatsoever.
I mean, I understand, like, and Damari Carroll said at the press conference today, you know, I told the guys, like, what happened in the regular season doesn't matter. Like, this is a new season. Nobody cares about the regular season. That's not like, players play harder in the playoffs, whatever. If you're a player, if you're a coaching staff and you actually have to play the games, then you should absolutely have that mindset this time of year, because what you did on the regular season will not help you now. But as an observer of basketball, I don't think that way at all. I'm not looking at the playoffs as completely the be all end all. There was a great, I don't know if you saw it, Pablo Torre from ESPN did like an essay
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah, so you saw this where he's talking about big playoff and how we've been kind of conditioned to only care about the postseason and think that whoever wins the title, whoever performs well in the playoff, that's what really matters. And we can just ignore this huge sample size of games that happen, this grind of a regular season where it's really tough to do, say what the Warriors did that's never been done before. And we just ignore it when it comes, when we get to the playoff time. And I don't think that's the right way to approach watching the NBA. Obviously Pablo's thing was a little tongue in cheek, but, I love that. And I think that's sort of the same way you can think of it as a Raptors fan is sort of what Dwayne Casey said yesterday is like, yeah, he doesn't want to think about losing in the first round, but that wouldn't completely invalidate everything that was done before. And I think the players, the coaching staff, they know they'll be judged on what happens now. But as a fan, I think to deprive yourself of the experience of like, having fun watching a really good regular season team is just kind of silly.
Yeah. And I mean, I think too, once this first round series, like if the Raptors end up coming through, once it ends and the Raptors are in the second round, like I think that like the whole thing changes and it's immediately the best season in franchise history, just based on the regular season and the first round win. Like that just, I think all like the anxiety goes away and then you can just sort of enjoy whatever second round series happens. Speaking of which, our next question, it comes from Assad. It is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, I'm guessing. Will Miami intentionally lose to the Hornets in order to not be swept by the Raptors in the second round?
That's an interesting one.
I guess we could just sort of use this as like a look ahead. If the Raptors are to make it through the first round, like, are you thinking Miami comes out of that series with Charlotte? I don't think it's really a slam dunk if Nick Batum is healthy. If Batum's healthy, I think that's a pretty competitive series. Just because I think Charlotte's shooting, like it's sort of like similar to what the Raptors in Indiana. There's, you know, Charlotte shoots the ball really well and they shoot a ton of threes. And Miami, while they've been better with Joe Johnson and Josh Richardson shooting lately and sort of making up for the struggles they had earlier in the season, I don't think it's like a walk in the park that Miami's just going to beat Charlotte, especially if Batum's healthy. What do you think about that series there?
I picked the Hornets.
Yeah? Okay.
I went back and forth a little bit. That series and the Hawks-Celtics series just killed me.
They're going to be fun, man.
Yeah, I think they're going to be great. I didn't know what to do. I will say the Hornets-Heat series was a little easier than the Celtics-Hawks one to pick for me. Basically because of what you said. Like, they built a team, and I think you could see it coming into the season. You could sort of see just watching them in the preseason. They completely redesigned their offense. The Kemba Walker just had so much more space because of the shooters that he had around him. He improved as a shooter himself, by the way, and has had a really, really just fantastic season. And he's a guy that obviously Raptors fans know is always kind of giving Toronto trouble, hit some very big shots against them. When I look at those two teams, they're similar in some ways, but I think just the shooting aspect, I trust the Hornets way more to make big shots and to create big shots in these situations. Now, I think the talent disparity is not high. Like, it's very even, but maybe I'm messing up and not putting enough faith into a future Hall of Famer. But when I look at like Dwayne Wade, I'm wondering, does he have like a few games in him where he can just will his team to victory and make difficult shots and create open looks for other guys? Maybe. But I do think a lot of the times when I've watched the Heat this year, I've thought they've been better when he hasn't been on the court. And I've just thought like, man, he takes some tough shots. And I could look really stupid because he could totally just go out and have a huge playoff series and win it for them. But the way that they play, I'm not sure that having so much of the offense go through him is necessarily the greatest idea.
Yeah, this all rides on Batum because I think Batum's not healthy.
He does everything for them.
Yeah, he's amazing, but we'll see there.
Also, Marvin Williams turning into like their version of Harrison Barnes is funny because Barnes was compared to Marvin Williams coming up so often, sometimes in a negative way. But Williams has had an awesome season for the Hornets. And Luol Deng is kind of serving the same function, playing a ton of stretch four for Miami. So, like, that'll be a really cool matchup. Doesn't necessarily, like, I don't know how much, like, the average NBA fan is looking forward to those Eastern Conference series that we're talking about here, but, like, I really am.
I think they're the two most compelling series.
Yeah.
Like, I think everything in the West, I mean, I guess Blazers-Clippers will be a lot of fun, but I think in the East, like, I think those are legitimately toss-ups, both of those series, so
yeah.
I'm looking forward to both.
And none of those, neither of those teams are going to be an easy one for the Raptors either.
No, not like, at all. And we can always, yeah, I don't want to get into a second round preview at this point, but
no, but like, as great as the Raptors have been, like, toward the end of the year, all of those teams were sort of on the same level.
Yeah, it's a four-way tie in terms of record is, like, I don't know if that's ever happened before. That's crazy.
It's ridiculous.
All right, that's the questions we got. We didn't get quite as many as I'd hoped with you coming on, but we're sort of hit or miss with the questions anyway. So let's get to our episode sponsor. This week's episode is brought to you by... This one's out of left field. I just discovered this guy played for the Raptors while you were talking. Oh, wow. This one is brought to you by 2006-07 Raptors playoff hero, Luke Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
He played three games in the playoffs in his entire career. All three came with the Raptors in that 06-07 series against the Nets. He played 11 total minutes, averaged 2 points a game in the playoffs, 1.7 rebounds. His per 36 numbers were amazing. 19.6 and 16.4. He was a monster per 36 in his only playoff games of his career. I thought Luke Jackson played for a lot longer than like four seasons.
Yeah, he just kind of flamed out. I think there was a major injury in there somewhere.
Yeah, probably.
I do remember one of my friends was like the most excited person on earth when the Raptors signed Luke Jackson. It was like he was super high on him. I think he went to Oregon, like coming out and going into the draft. And
I think it was a midseason trade. I think he was traded to them midseason by the Clippers, I think.
Okay, it was a trade. I thought it was a signing for some reason. But I just remember when the Raptors got Luke Jackson, my one friend Eric, like, freaked out and lost his mind and was like, this guy is going to be so good. But that didn't really pan out. Yeah. I don't have a lot of other Luke Jackson's memory.
I don't know. Like,
I remember his hair very well.
Yeah. I literally have no memories of Luke Jackson. I didn't know he played for the Raptors until just now. He only played 10 games as a Raptor. He averaged 4.5 points in the regular season, a rebound and assist. It's underwhelming career for Luke Jackson. So that's our episode sponsor for this week. James, I really want to thank you for coming on for this, what turned out to be a lot longer preview podcast than I thought it would be. I really appreciate you taking the time, man.
No problem. Thank you for having me. Happy playoffs.
And yes, anything coming down from you that you'd like to promote? I know you guys probably have some podcasts coming out for playoff preview stuff or.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We have a ton of content on the site right now. I just did a Raptors story on Jason Thompson and his long, winding, crazy road that mostly was just Sacramento roads to the NBA playoffs since he is about to break the league's streak for games played without appearing in the postseason. We dropped a ton of playoff preview content today. Zach Harper just did a big long-form feature on Karl-Anthony Towns. And
that was amazing, by the way.
Yes.
So good.
And I will have some sort of Norman Powell profile coming soon.
Cool. Also, read James's thing from last week on the Sixers and Sixers fans and their like dedication to the process. That was really cool to read, too.
Thanks very much.
It was great. You can follow James on Twitter at OutsideTheNBA. I'm sure you probably already do. You can follow me at Woodley Sean. You can follow Raptors HQ at Raptors HQ, of course. Subscribe, rate, review the podcast on iTunes. We're going to have a ton of stuff coming up throughout the playoffs. We'll have multiple podcasts a week is the plan right now. Both Daniel Reynolds and I will be at games covering and giving content there. John Godis, he's going to be hosting HQ Overtime, which will be a live post-game show that you can tune into after the games. It'll be 20-25 minutes with a different guest for every show. So make sure you keep your eye out for links for that. And just keep an eye out to the site. There's going to be a ton of stuff coming down over the next few days and throughout the playoffs. So, James, thanks again for coming on, man. And we'll be back again very soon with another episode of The Headquarters.